Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great, but I feel like a pleasure ride on some kind of vehicle. Do you have any recommendations?
Try the Sunrail?
Yeah, I guess that would work, but I was thinking something elevated above the ground so I could see all the peasants beneath me.
Helicopter, hot air balloon.
Yeah, I suppose. But, you know, I can really go for a monorail. Maybe I'll head over to Disney and just ride the monorail for a few days.
Yeah, you can do that. I don't think you need a ticket for that. Yes, guys, big episode this week. Before we get into it, remind you guys, please rate, review, subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcast of choice. We really appreciate it. Helps us out. This week's episode, March vs. the Monorail, episode 9 out of 10, originally aired January 14th, 1993, written by Conan O'Brien, you know that fella, directed by Rich Moore, finished 30th in ratings for the week with a Nielsen rating of 13.7, highest rated show on Fox that week. The chalkboard gag, I will not eat things for money. That's probably a good, that's probably good. You shouldn't.
I think it technically counts as a prostitution.
The couch gag. They are joined by several rows of supporting characters. Pretty much all the ones you know are jump in front of them. It's nice to get to see them all.
It's a big happy time. Everyone's all lit up.
The episode guest stars Leonard Nimoy as himself. Does a great job.
A fantastic job, yeah.
Yeah. Matt and I actually have recently went to there was a special night at a Orlando theater called the Enzinas Art House Theater, and they had a Leonard Nimoy appreciation night where they aired Star Trek Voyage Home, which is the one with the whales, where they go back in
time. That's Star Trek 4.
And it was a lot of fun. It was great seeing Leonard Nimoy there and watching this episode. More memories. Yeah, Phil Hartman does an amazing job, as always, but this is his best performance. I mean, maybe the only one that rivals it is in The Simpsons is as Troy McClure in A Fish Called Selma. Yeah, those are probably the only two candidates, but it's pretty good. The episode begins with Homer singing the Flintstones theme with his own lyrics in his car.
Simpson, Homer Simpson, he's the greatest guy in history. From the town of Springfield, he's about to hit a chestnut tree.
Ouch.
The car is total, but apparently just gets better.
Miraculously.
And I think that's the thing with this episode is that it really is emblematic of the later seasons. Where it's just, you know, it has tons of wacky stuff in it and things that aren't, you know, aren't real life things. And at the time, people were really kind of not necessarily fans of it. I think I saw a quote from Yardley Smith saying they were all kind of disappointed in this episode.
Really?
Really. I can give you the exact quote if you want it. Let's see. Episode is truly one of our worst. We all agree. So it was during the production of season 7. She said that, but as time has gone by, this episode has, you know, become revered. It is atop of many people's all-time lists of best episodes. We do the Flintstones opening. We have Carl and Lenny at the plant, putting toxic waste in barrels. And they wonder what's gonna happen with it. Ends up burns and smithers. All they do is just hide it at the local park. We also get an appearance of Axel's theme from Beverly Hills Cop again. They've been using it a lot the past maybe 2 years of the show.
Well, it's a great song that you can play in the background when someone's supposed to be doing something slightly nefarious, but also a little funny.
They're like sneaking. It works really well. Anytime anyone sneaks, it works. But they hide the toxic waste and trying to hide the barrels in trees. We see one tree has got 9 barrels in it, has a tentacles, and the squirrel now has laser vision. But they end up getting caught by the EPA. Burns is wheeled into the courtroom with the Hannibal Lecter getup on, the full mask. He's fined $3 million, and apparently he has that in just a pocket change, literally. Smithers grabs his wallet and has $3 million in what looks like $5,000 bills.
Which technically they don't make anymore, so I guess back then they were still technically legal tender.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter. We take it for granted. It's $3 million. He also buys the statue, the, was it, the, that, not the actual Statue of Liberty, but a statue
The Statue of Justice.
Of Justice, that's what it is. I got mixed up. The Statue of Justice in the back. But with this windfall, the city of Springfield, what will they do with this $3 million? And they have a town hall meeting. We get glimpses of what Lisa and Bart would like to do with it. Lisa, of course, wants to put it towards, you know, education and virtual reality, which we are just getting to now, the capabilities that Lisa wants to do. Bart wants to build giant mechanical ants and destroy the school. Not quite the same. Both very highly technological things, though. There's that. So Quimby's at the meeting, wants to, you know, do the normal meeting things. Everyone's just yelling at him to get to the money, get to the money. And, you know, different people stand up, giving, you know, suggestions what to do with the money, including a one Mr. Snrub.
Hello, my name is Mr. Snrub, and I come from, someplace far away. Yes, that will do. Anyway, I say we invest that money back in the nuclear plant.
I like the way Snrub thinks.
Everyone immediately recognizes that it's Mr. Burns in disguise, and he and Smithers, using a Batman-style hook, like grappling hook, or what does Batman call it, Matt? The little, like a little pocket thing. They don't exist
pocket
in real, they don't exist in real life. They Mythbusters. It's not a it is a grappling hook, but it has a different name.
I don't know what you're looking for. Sorry.
Gosh. Marge, of course, being the voice of reason, she even has prepared 3x5 cards, which I that's a great character touch. Wants to repair Main Street, because apparently Homer and many others drive down the street with snow tires on while carrying pianos, destroying this pavement. Grandpa chimes in against it. Everyone thinks that he is for it, and so he gets, you know, trumpeted as the leader of this, and everyone's just about to agree that, yes, we should fix Main Street with the money before Mr. Lyle Lanley introduces himself.
You know, a town with money's a little like the mule with a spinning wheel. No one knows how he got it, and danged if he knows how to use it.
Mule.
The name's Lanley, Lyle Lanley. And I come before you good people tonight with an idea. Probably the greatest... Oh, it's not for you. It's more of a Shelbyville idea.
Now, wait just a minute. We're twice as smart as the people of Shelbyville. Just tell us your idea and we'll vote for it.
All right. I tell you what I'll do. I'll show you my idea. I give you the Springfield Monorail. I've sold monorails to Brockway, Ogdenville, and North Haverbrook, and by gum, it put them on the map.
Phil Hartman's performance as Lyle Lanley is unbelievable. Just stellar. Like, you have to buy into the fact this guy is super charismatic and smart and quick on his feet. You know, he's a fast talker, and it's sold completely.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things where it's hard to come across like this in a show, but especially when someone with such a limited amount of time that he could talk anyone into anything somehow and work them up into a frenzy where everyone is affected except for Marge. And it just works perfectly. It's a fantastic huckster. And there's a play about this, something about a trombone man, reminiscent of.
Music Man, it's called.
Music Man, that's what it is. I couldn't remember the name.
Trombone Man.
Well, you know, that's a musical instrument.
His entire thing is, Lyle Lanley is, Harold Hill is the protagonist of The Music Man. And so, you know, we have the same alliteration. The monorail song, which I'm about to play, resembles a song in The Music Man as well. So the whole huckster thing is straight from The Music Man. I don't know if this, would you call this the most well-known song from The Simpsons, original song, Matt?
It would probably be between this and the Stonecutter song, one of those two.
Yeah, they're both up there. Maybe, or actually, Baby on Board from B Sharps, from Homer's.
Really?
Homer's
Board. I wouldn't think that'd be very well known, but okay.
I don't know. I maybe it's just because I'm a Simpsons fan. It's so close to me, but it seems like it's such a good song. But this is, it's up there with some of the most iconic music from the entire show. And I could not justify not playing, so here it is.
Well, sir, there's nothing on earth like a genuine, bona fide, electrified six-car monorail. What I say?
Monorail.
What's it called?
Monorail.
That's right, monorail.
Monorail. Monorail. Monorail.
I hear the those things are awfully loud.
It glides as softly as a cloud. Is there a chance the truck could bend? Not on your life, my Hindu friend.
What about us Brendan slobs?
You'll be given cushy jobs.
Were you sent here by the devil?
No good, sir. I'm on the level.
The ring came off my pudding can.
Take my penknife, my good man. I swear it's Springfield's only choice. Throw up your hands and raise your voice.
Monterey.
What's it called?
Monterey.
Once again.
Monterey. But Main Street's still all cracked and broken.
Sorry, Mom. The mob has spoken.
Monterey. Monterey. Monterey.
Monterey. Mono, don't!
It took all the effort in the world not to sing along with that entire song.
It is a fantastic, fantastic song. I mean, I just, it gets in your head in an amazing way. Those catchy songs really do. And I don't know where the piano came from in the beginning, but good thing it was there.
But with that, we go to commercial.
And when we come back, we see, to begin with, a wonderful commercial to get people to work on the monorail.
Are you stuck in a dead-end job?
Maybe.
Are you squandering the precious gift of life in front of the idiot box?
What's it to you?
Are you on your third beer of the evening?
Does whiskey count as beer?
Well, maybe it's time you join the exciting field of monorail conducting by enrolling at the Lanley Institute.
Actual Institute may not match photo.
Which is a great, great commercial, especially with Homer talking back to it.
And the fact
and
that
yes,
the guy...
Whiskey counts as beer.
Okay, good. I asked the exact same question this weekend. And the guy in the commercial looks exactly like Homer. Like, it's just like a generic Homer model. It looks, it's perfect.
But of course, this commercial 100% works on Homer, and he claims to Marge it is his lifelong dream to be a monorail conductor, when she reminds him that it was his lifelong dream to run out on the field of a baseball game. And he did it last year. It's a cutaway to a newspaper where it says, Nut runs on field, ruins game. Because that's what will happen if Homer ran naked onto a baseball field. We then cut to the Lanley Institute, which is just a name, you know, on a piece of paper taped to a doorway, where Lyle Lanley is going over with his possible conductors, they're going to learn. And, unfortunately, there are some investigative reporters there, but thankfully they identify themselves when he asks. It's very thoughtful of them. And they even take their hidden camera, which was hidden inside some guy's turban with them, which, oh, hidden cameras from the 90s. They were gigantic. But luckily for them, Homer, he is selected randomly to be the monorail conductor. Because he's basically the first person who said, who, me? When Lanley said, yeah, this guy. So lucky for Homer, he's just one of those jerks who always speaks up and thinks everyone's talking to him.
And the fact that as he gestures towards Homer, it's also him looking at his notes and it's just pictures of doodles of him. Going,
with lots of money.
With lots of money going to Tahiti. That's it. That's so good.
Well, that's what I would doodle if I was the kind of huckster he is, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
But then we see Homer at home with Bart. And they're basically, Bart is quizzing Homer on the rules of monorail operation. And apparently you should not drink while operating the monorail. And do you remember what the other question was?
Off the top of my head, no.
Okay. Anyway, Homer is a bit trepidatious, but he eventually gets the answer right, and Bart, in a shocking turn of events, actually has respect for his father, and Homer says, oh, well, you know, would you like to change your name to Homer Jr.? That way the kids will know you're my son, and that's too much even for Bart, and he demurs.
Well, you didn't mention what they could call him, Matt.
Oh, sorry, Hoju. They could call him Hoju.
They could call Bart Hoju. Bart is, even with his newfound respect, is not necessarily enthusiastic about
that. Totally not okay with that. Which, you know, you're a smart kid, Bart. Good job. We then see Homer and Marge in bed, and they are also talking about, you know, the danger of the monorail.
According to this book, the monorail goes over 150 miles an hour. What if something goes wrong?
What if I'm taking a shower and I slip on a bar of soap? Oh my God, I'd be killed!
It frightens me that you want to work on something that's so unsafe.
We monorail conductors are a crazy breed, half in love with death, gobbling up danger like ordinary men eat peanuts. Am I turning you on?
No.
What if I undo this button?
Good night, Homer.
What if I talk like this? What if I sing to you? I gave my love a chicken, it had no bone. Chicken.
Speaking of things I still sing to this day, that that's also up there.
I gave my love a chicken.
It had no bones. That's... Anyway, we then... What?
Nothing. Go ahead, man. Continue.
All right, yeah. My wife has heard that way too much, and she's getting kind of sick of it, but it's still funny to me. We then cut to a news report with newsman Kent Brockman announcing that Springfield has found its monorail conductor, and they have a file photo of Homer with his mouth completely stuffed with cigarettes, which mm-hmm. seems a little random, but it's really funny.
It's a classic. I think it's a classic picture of that, just of a man with his mouth full of cigarettes. They just did it with Homer.
Oh, okay. Sure enough. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Anyway, we then see Homer giving a tour of the monorail to Marge and the kids, and he opens up a closet, and there's a family of possums in there. Marge actually opens it, and Homer says in one of the best lines of the episode, "I call the big one Bitey," which anyone who's ever come across possums knows is probably not true, because generally they just leave you alone. They hiss and whatnot, but in my experience, I had to shoo one out of a garage once, and it just sat there and looked at me the entire time, even when I was sweeping it with a broom. So probably not actually bitey, but, you know, it works. This, of course, makes Marge even more scared for Homer's life. So she goes to talk to Mr. Lanley, and she goes into his office and discovers, to her horror, Lanley's notebook, which, of course, has doodles in it of the monorail failing while he laughs and drives out of town with a whole bunch of money. Lanley, of course, discovers her in there and says, "How much did you see?" And Marge, in some amazing quick thinking on her part, says, "Nothing incriminating." And Lanley, of course, takes her at her word because he's a very trusting individual, apparently. He's a con man, but he trusts everybody else.
Well, Marge gives she has the facade of someone who is trustworthy.
That's true. She is completely guileless. But of course, upon seeing this, Marge decides she has to check out what's going on. So she goes to one of the other cities, which I guess is fairly nearby with a monorail, North Haverbrook, where she discovers a post-apocalyptic wasteland with a monorail still hanging by a thread and, swinging in the breeze, I guess.
it's like Fallout 3. I don't understand why this town hasn't cleaned itself up a little bit, but.
Yeah, but luckily she meets Sebastian Cobb, who was apparently the person hired to build the North Haverbrook monorail. And basically, Lanley cut corners everywhere. Everything was terrible. And the celebrity on the maiden voyage was Gallagher.
Aw.
Terrible.
Poor Gallagher.
That's okay. I'm sure there are people who enjoy Gallagher, but he's pretty widely regarded as someone who...
Hacky?
Is not considered a big celebrity. Yes, hacky is a great term for it.
Should I share my Gallagher?
Absolutely.
My Gallagher story? I have a Gallagher story. I'll share my Gallagher story. I'll try and make it brief. I had a friend who was just obsessed with Gallagher for a very short amount of time, just because he's such like a weird cultural audit, like a weird cultural entity. Like, you know, he was a very, very popular comedian in the 80s and early 90s, and then he just kind of fell off a cliff and disappeared. There's all these weird stories about him, like suing his brother, taking over his identity and touring as Gallagher T-O-O and doing the same bits. But so we heard that Gallagher still tours, and he was coming to, I lived in Tampa at the time, so he was going to have a show in Tampa. So we went to the show. We got there late, and I was initially worried because it's first come first serve. You just sit where you can. We wanted to sit up close because we wanted to get hit with watermelon. You know, that we wanted, you know, that the experience. instead, we got there late. The only seats available were the top balcony seats. But they're great seats. Like, you have no one in front of you. You're like literally just staring right over the edge, and you're like still very close. But as you walk past, as you're walking to your seat, there's these open doors on your right, and I look in these doors to my right, and there is Gallagher sitting on a couch about 7 feet away from me, putting on his socks. So Gallagher came out, said hi. We all met him, got pictures with him, and then he went on and did his show. Gallagher, now his show is it's a little sad. I'm gonna say that right now. It's he's good at this, the crushing stuff, like hitting stuff with his hammer. He's great at that still. He knows exactly how to do that. He's an old pro at that. His other material, offensive to multiple races and to women and probably other people. Probably, I'm sure it was homophobic as well. but kind of just, we all were like kind of wincing at certain parts. But he, my friend went on to join him at a bar and spend some more time with him and get, he had a DVD set that he got signed by Gallagher. That is my Gallagher story.
Oh my gosh.
It's very strange. We met I met Gallagher. He's, there you go. There you go, Matt.
Would you say he was a nice fella?
He was personable on one-on-one basis.
Well, that's good.
Best fake smile I've ever seen.
Well, that's definitely saying something. I'm sure he has a lot of practice at that.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Well, anyway, Marge, of course, is concerned that the monorail is going to have something terrible happen to it. So she asks Mr. Cobb, what can they do? And he responds, you better have a damn good conductor. And of course, we immediately cut to Homer having locked his keys inside the monorail, which what kind of monorail takes keys to get into? I mean, but anyway, that's it. And we cut to commercial.
Okay. That monorail, the monorail from the 1964 World's Fair needs keys.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
That's what it is. But when we come back, it is the grand opening of the monorail. It's a big event. Kent Brockman is on the red carpet interviewing people. We get Krusty, of course. We get an appearance of his name is Dash Calhoun or something like that. Recently outed leading man. I want to say, I can't remember his name exactly. You remember, Matt?
Dash Calhoun.
That's what I was right. We get Lurline Lumpkin, and now she has Doris Growl's voice instead of lovely Beverly D'Angelo's. Not doing too well. We get Luke Perry, right? Is it like a parody of Luke Perry? I forget if it's actual. It's not Luke.
I believe it is a parody.
Yeah, but it looks exactly like Luke Perry. And of course, Leonard Nimoy is on site as official, MC for the event or something like that, or
their guest of honor, right?
Guest of honor, yeah. And the mayor doesn't quite know who he is.
Now I'd like to turn things over to our Grand Marshal, Mr. Leonard Nimoy.
I'd say this vessel could do at least warp 5.
And let me say, may the force be with you.
Do you even know who I am?
I think I do. Weren't you one of the little rascals?
Sorry. It gets me every time.
Yeah. We see Homer's uniform, which is a Star Wars uniform, strangely enough, when, you know, Corey just mentions it. They start the monorail. It almost immediately, everything in it breaks. Like, it's not like it works for a little bit. It immediately, everything just starts breaking, except for the seldom break. The seldom break is the only thing.
The seldom break does break.
It does break, not right away. It holds on for a little bit of time. Marge and Dr. Cobb, I suppose, pull up just in time to see it to starting. He had to stop for a haircut, which he apologizes for.
He really needed it, to be fair.
He did. He really did need that haircut. They are trying to rush to figure out what's going wrong. But Marge is trying to figure out how fast they're going.
How fast are they going?
Well, judging by your husband's cowardly scream, 180 miles an hour.
Every time he talks, all I can hear is like the nerd version of Rainier Wolfcastle.
They try and pull the brakes. Apparently, brakes aren't working. We see the Quimby-Wiggum rivalry rear its head again. This is where we see we get a glimpse into the town charter of Springfield, where Wiggum gets pigs and comely lasses.
Oh yeah,
chief constable. We find that the monorail is solar powered. I don't know how that's possible, but it is. There's a solar eclipse, which has Leonard Nimoy quoting the solar eclipse. The cosmic ballet goes on. I really like the little, it's just a little touch in this, but they have the little relationship between Nimoy and, like, just a random dude. And, like, Nimoy's cornered this guy, explains how the doors opened in the set of Star Trek, and he's sitting next
to
him.
It's like all these people don't want to talk to him. It's like, it's Leonard Nimoy. Everyone would want to talk to him.
Yeah.
All right.
I know. It's so sad. We cut back to Lyle Lanley, who's on an airplane. Lisa is, like, curious, why couldn't you stay for the... Oh, I have to go. My airplane leaves in 1 minute. But we find that the plane is stopping on its way to Tahiti and in North Haverbrook. And from what it looks like, Matt Northaver is in the Dakotas, it looks like, maybe? Or
And Ogdenville's in Arizona, but Marge drives to both of them. So I think maybe that Matt might have been a little exaggerated, but yeah.
Okay. But the residents of Northaver Brook know that he's on the plane and presumably beat him up or murder him. It's not sure because we never see Lyle Lanley again. He could be dead. The monorail just won't stop. So it just keeps going and going and going and going. And Krusty, you know, kind of goes crazy and wants off the monorail.
Krusty wants out!
No. The world needs laughter.
Leonard Nimoy saves Krusty's life. Marge gets on the comm and talks to Homer. And says that she has a someone who can help him.
Are we gonna die, son?
Yeah, but at least we'll take a lot of innocent people with us.
Homer?
Yellow.
Homer, there's a man here who thinks he can help you.
Batman?
No, he's a scientist.
Batman's a scientist.
It's not Batman.
It's not Batman.
Well, Batman would have helped.
He would have helped. That's true. He gets advice. Basically, they need an anchor of some sort. So Homer grabs a rope from a trusty cowboy who's riding the monorail for some reason, grabs the giant M from the side of the monorail, ties it real quick, throws it outside of the I keep wanting to call it a ship, but it's just a cabin?
Essentially, yeah.
Of the cabin, and quickly ties it up, ties off the rope very quickly. Yeah, that was a very good knot tying for like six. He had like a second to tie that knot, the anchor knot.
Yeah, apparently he was not a Boy Scout, but close enough.
Yeah, but and we get a great sequence of the M dragging through Springfield, tearing up pavement, cutting, down their oldest tree, which destroys the birthplace of Jebediah Springfield, cuts Siamese twins in half. Is there anything I'm missing? It does.
I don't believe so. That's the important stuff.
That's the important things. Before finally embedding itself in a giant donut at Springfield's Donut Shop, it is not the Lard Lad Donut. Homer, of course, has a statement I currently have, I think, as my life motto.
Donuts. Is there anything they can't do?
That's true. There's nothing donuts cannot do when it comes to inspiring people.
They do. They do everything. So this day is saved. Leonard Nimoy beams away, I guess we're to presume that he was on a mission with, from Starfleet to save everyone in Springfield that day.
You didn't do anything, didn't,
He did save Krusty. He saved Krusty.
Oh, that's right. That was his mission, is to save Krusty.
Yeah, he had to save Krusty's life. But to end the episode, we get, narration from Marge about Springfield's history with weird investments.
And that was the only folly the people of Springfield ever embarked upon. Except for the popsicle stick skyscraper. And the 50-foot magnifying glass. And that escalator to nowhere.
Mom! Ah! Ah!
Escalator to nowhere. Sounds like a great ride or a career choice these days.
So that's the episode. It's a great, I mean, people revere it for a reason. It is just jam packed with humor, gags, references, story. Like, it is as tight an episode as you could have in The Simpsons.
That's true. The only thing it's really missing is that, you know, the emotional component. That tends to be an equal measure, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah, that's if there's one thing you're going to kind of critique about the episode is that there's not that, you know, the of all the things this of Simpsons like give and all their different kinds of episodes, this one doesn't have that like huge emotional core. I don't know how they would. I mean, they have a certain amount just because of empathy for the people of Springfield.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how they'd fit it in. We talk about it. There's not much wasted time in this episode. They get right to
the
point.
Every little thing. There's a joke crammed in every possible minute.
Yeah. It's extremely dense, amazing. We had to rewatch Lisa's Substitute. And give you guys a little teaser for later on. We will rank it. We will rank it at the end of the show. Surprisingly, no entries for my favorite episode. I don't know. Maybe just people just overlooked it and didn't think about it. But if you have a favorite episode, please send them in. Send them in at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com, explaining what your favorite episode is and why. And we'll read it aloud on the show. Next up, it is time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Interesting info. Someone apparently was at the New York's World Fair, and there was a monorail at the New York's World Fair. So that was accurate in 1964. But it was a top-down monorail. Like it hung. It didn't. It was
oh,
not.
Oh, that's weird.
It went. You were underneath the rail, not on top of it. Apparently, it went very slow. Did not go 180 miles an hour. But they went on to describe everything that was at the World's Fair and where it was at 1993 at the time. Like how if it's been used since and all that stuff. There's also someone on the news group who's been taking to identifying all the random cars in each episode. Like make model year. Like that's another thing that's been added to this YouTube. It's very interesting because like everyone breaks down all the cultural references. Someone's just like, well, I can identify just, and it's not even like the Simpsons car. It's just like the random cars driving down the street in background scenes or when they were on Main Street in this episode, they talked about like that cab is a random, you know, that model and stuff. It's very interesting.
Weird.
Yeah. But you guys can find this alt.tv.simpsons. It's at Google Groups. It's archived there pretty much almost right after the end of the first season started up. So you can go back and look at any time. Next up, listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL's gonna give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
This week's question, favorite time Homer has defied death. That's a lot to choose from. Surprisingly, yeah. Homer has defied death many, many times. But tons of great answers, as always. First up, from Twitter, we have Sean, at SeanieMac15. King-size Homer showed that Homer's morbid obesity not only didn't kill him, but saved the town. Max, at MGiamette, I apologize if I mispronounced that, when Homer saved the space shuttle with an inanimate carbon rod, hashtag In Rod We Trust. Justin at Justin IFCIT, failing to jump over the Springfield Gorge and falling to the bottom twice. Mathenshaw11, pass from Raging Ape Simpson as Grumbling Grandson in The Curse of a Flying Hellfish at hashtag maybe not but just funny. Clever. I like it. Danny at Woosh Danny H. From the movie, Springfield Mom trying to kill him before he goes through sinkhole while he's shooting off middle fingers. It's one of the best moments in the movie, in my personal opinion. Maxhead at Mr. Callius, or Maxed, probably from the Homer They Fall. He could easily have died if Moe hadn't saved him. Those hits were brutal. And that's very true. Jerdrick, don't hold back. On a Facebook from Chris, jumping Springfield Gorge on the skateboard, falling out of the ambulance. Something you said about a classic throwback bit from the early days. It's also been referenced many times since, including the movie. Easter egg in this is if you look in the movie after they jump the gorge on the motorcycle, you can see the ambulance still there, smashed into the tree from the episode Bart the Daredevil. Jason, king-size Homer, showing the obesity is healthy for you because a slimmer person would have fallen to their death and Homer's ass prevented the release of toxic gas. Eric, God, I would say my favorite based on the Hyperion Homer is the episode where he skips church, Homer the Heretic. He falls asleep, on the couch smoking a cigar. And Flanders repeatedly has to get him out of the house. Best gag is Flanders throwing him out of the second story window onto a mattress and Homer bouncing back inside into the window. Kevin, my favorite is Deep Space Homer when the inanimate carbon rod fixes the hatch, thus saving Homer from possible death. Love the fact that you are introduced to the rod early on and it pays off not once, but twice. I'm slowly introducing my 6-year-old to The Simpsons. She was so upset about the reveal at the end of the episode. It was great to see her get the joke. That's amazing. And finally, we have Izzy. Near Mess with Death, memorable moment would be the episode where Homer accidentally eats the fugu at the Happy Sumo. Redfish, bluefish, blowfish, bluefish. You guys know what I'm saying. After hearing he has less than a day to live, he attempts a bucket list, which we didn't really... there was no such thing as a bucket list at that time. Runs out of time, collapsing on a recliner while listening Larry King read the Bible. only to be discovered by Marge, who discovers he's not dead. The episode is one of my favorites. It's both Larry King's Bible reading and George Takei's Sushi Chef both have great minor parts. It's very true. That is a memorable moment. So, Matt, what is your answer?
Well, being the indecisive person that I am, I have two that I really consider. And the one I didn't go with is actually Mountain of Madness, strictly for the line, "Oh God, protect this rocket house and all who dwell within the rocket house," because that is fantastic. But I'm actually going to go with Deep Space Homer, because as a kid, I was very obsessed with astronauts and the space shuttle and all that stuff. And seeing as how the whole episode kind of revolves around Homer defying death in that case and how he does it completely by accident, like usual, it's just an all around great example of him, you know, just completely getting out of a situation that no one should ever survive.
My answer, Homer's Enemy.
Ooh, yeah.
When he is about to drink the acid and then Frank Grimes knocks it out of his hand, it always stands out to me.
But there are several times in that episode where he should have died.
Yeah, probably. I think it's kind of the charm of that episode is pointing out that Homer has almost died many, 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 many times.
Mm.
And that Grimes is this weird anomaly that could spot it suddenly. Like, he's just, like, this weird outsider. It was immediate for me. You guys, let's see. Our next week's question. What's your favorite episode with verses in the title?
Ooh.
That's a good question. I like it. I like that question. There's a lot of good candidates. This episode in particular is an obvious answer, but there's other really good ones that I don't know. I'm not sure. I have to think about it. This is a thinker. You can find this question on our social media, which is on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod. Like us there. You can follow us on Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod. You can email us, at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. And you can actually, follow our Tumblr. I'm trying to build it up a little bit. It's, TheSimpsonsShowPod.tumblr.com. Any of those places you can find us, and I'll put our listener questions, Simpsons things, news, links that come up during the week, and giveaways. Started giveaways too, so keep an eye out for those things. Next up, Matt, time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am dun, dun, smart. Dun. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
No Google Trivia Challenge is part show where Matt and I will try and stump one another with trivia questions. Three of them, one easy, one medium, one hard. We accept listener-submitted themes and questions that I will throw at Matt, because he's generally better at this than I am. Our theme this week is pets. Simpsons pets. This is from my wife, Kim, gave us this one. I had to do it as we were looking at pictures of pets. Matt, start us off. Give me an easy question.
All right. I'm really hoping you get this one. What place did Santa's Little Helper come in at the dog track in Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire?
Last place.
That is correct. He was dead last.
Well, Matt, I certainly hope you get my easy question. What is the first appearance of Santa's Little Helper?
Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire, the first episode of the entire show, I believe.
That is correct. You are right.
All right, easy questions out of the way. Ready for a tougher one?
Sure, go ahead.
What color was Snowball 1?
Black, right? No, white.
Ooh, I'm sorry.
No, white. Ah. It's white. It's white. No, backwards. White. White. Matt, white. I got
that's
it.
That's correct.
I changed my answer.
White with tire tracks.
That's all. Matt.
Well, that is the first time we see Snowball 1 when Bart goes to heaven.
Okay. You ready for a medium question?
I am.
In Saddlesore Galactica, what is the name of Bart's horse?
Oh, God. Stupid horse. Not Kuma. Oh, God. I can see it when they rename him, too. Oh. I can't remember. It's on the tip of my tongue. I think it has a D in it, maybe. I don't.
Yes. It's Duncan, a.k.a.
Duncan.
Furious D.
Furious D. That's the part where I was trying to remember. Damn it.
He's renamed Furious D. Okay, Matt. Give me a hard one.
All right, this is a pretty tough one, but I think you might be able to pull it out.
Okay.
Name five of the puppies from 2 Dozen and 1 Greyhounds. There are 25 of them, and you'll have to name five.
I don't know. I could name Rory Calhoun.
No, that's actually not one of the 25.
I don't know. I can't think of any of them. They had names?
Every one of them, they had them on the dishes when they fed them all. They each had their own individual name. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, but I... No, I cannot remember any of them. I haven't watched that episode forever.
Are you ready for all 25?
Sure, go ahead.
There's Rover, Fido, Rex, Spot, Rover 2, Fido 2, Rex 2, Cleo, Dave, Jay, Paul, Branford, Dave 2, Jay 2, Paul 2, Branford 2, Sleepy, Dopey, Grumpy, Donner, Blitzen, Grumpy 2, King, Queenie, Prince, and the puppy formerly known as Prince.
I didn't know any of those. None of those, that is not, nothing rings a bell with that. That did not ring
the only
anything.
Ones I remembered were Rover, Fido, Rex, their number 2s, and Branford 2, and then the Prince and the puppy formerly known as Prince. So a lot of those, like the dwarves and the reindeer, completely didn't remember any of those at all. So yeah,
that's hard. Okay. You ready? This is a very hard question, Matt.
Oh, God, I guess.
In what season 22 episode does Bart get a pet carrier pigeon?
I have no idea of the name whatsoever.
It's a really bad title. I think it's a terrible title. It stands out for that reason.
Really?
It gives away the episode.
What is it? Bart gets a carrier pigeon?
No, that'd be fine. I mean, it gives away what happens in the episode.
In season 22?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I got nothing. What is it?
How munched is that birdie in the window?
Oh, ouch. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because Santa's Little Helper eats it, like, partway through the episode, and Bart is super pissed at Santa's Little Helper.
Yes,
exactly. That is terrible. But you're right. It completely gives it away.
Bart gets a carrier pigeon is 100% better than that episode. That's a little... Yeah. Yeah. They can just, yeah. Okay. So, you ready for some listener trivia, Matt?
Sure.
These are all from Joanna, who's given us a gargantuan list to work from. And I just picked a few choice ones from... These are all varying in difficulty. Not super hard. At least these. She did send in that were ours super hard, but I was going to mix them up a little bit. What is Martin Prince's IQ?
212, I believe.
Close. No cigar. 216.
No. Oh, that's right, because it was 912. Damn it.
What is the name of Gabbo's puppeteer?
Oh, God. Gabbo's puppeteer.
He technically is Gabbo.
Yeah.
Although...
Arthur Crandall?
That is correct. Got it. Good job. Oh.
It took me a second.
What? We're going to have to talk about that in that episode.
Okay, that's creepy.
What is the name of the cocktail waitress Ned marries?
Oh, wow. Ginger?
Mm-hmm. Got it right.
Okay.
Correct?
Yeah. I can't remember which the one Homer marries. I can't remember her name, but Ginger I remembered.
I believe it's Amber.
Amber, that's right, yeah. Because she dies later on. Spoiler alert.
Last question. From Joanna. What did Lionel Hutz rename himself after babysitting Bart and Lisa?
Miguel Sanchez.
That is correct. That's correct. So you guys can submit. Please submit themes. Send us more questions. All our social media or email them to me, whatever. And I will try and throw them in the show at some point. I try not to lose track. I'll do my best. It is time for our final segment, Matt. This one's going to be a tricky one, I think, just because it's a tough discussion. It is time for best episode ever. Best episode ever is the part of the show, Matt, and I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Marge vs. the Monorail is a very good episode, Matt. It's revered for a reason. It is jam-packed with humor, character, a lot of stuff in this that becomes like Springfield lore, and so many quotes. You know, I call the big one Bitey, Batman's a scientist.
The great songs, I mean, that's like just one of those memorable songs ever. So good.
Leonard Nimoy, one of the best celebrity guest appearances, Phil Hartman.
Especially as themselves.
Yeah, as themselves, Leonard Nimoy. Especially, yeah. Does it? Okay. I think it's at least number two.
Oh, easily, at least number two. The question really is.
Is it better?
Is it number one?
Is it number one?
I don't know. I really love Lisa Substitute. We watched it again. I'm going to have to put my vote in for Marge versus the Monorail because it is so hilarious, so incredibly jam-packed, and there is a little bit of heart in the fact of how concerned Marge is and Bart's respect for Homer and that sort of thing. It's just wall-to-wall. Everything that makes this episode great is what makes a Simpsons episode great, with the exception of those deep emotional connections. But... The guest characters are great. The Simpsons themselves are spot on. Funny stuff is happening every once in a while. Great guest stars, both as original character and as themselves. I mean, it's barely, but I would have to put it above Lisa Substitute.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. Lisa Substitute is a great episode. But I think this just they've gotten better at making Simpsons episodes. Since we had seen Lisa Substitute, that's way back in season 2. They have kind of honed that formula. And we were talking about earlier, mentioned earlier, like, yes, it doesn't have as much emotional impact as Lisa Substitute does. And I don't know if they were going to see another episode that does. I mean, there's a couple competitors, but it's up there with the most emotional, like, heartfelt episodes of The Simpsons ever. But like, there's no room. And this episode there's no wasted time. It gets right to the action. Lyle Lanley, in one appearance, becomes one of the most famous characters Phil Hartman ever did. People still talk about Leonard Nimoy's appearance in this. The monorail song, still, if not the one of the most famous Simpsons songs, it just overwhelms how good this episode, like, you can watch this episode 5 times in a row and still get something out of it. I think it's just so dense. There's so much in it. So, narrowly, but it's there. New number one, I believe. Let me check our Facebook really quick, because I think it was Abby posted it. She had asked us. She had asked all the Facebook fans what episode they think would take over new number one. Back in the, come on, Facebook, cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was Abby. I was correct. Abby had asked us. She says I like Lisa Substitute better. I think they might pick Marjorie's the Monorail.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Lisa Substitute is a great episode, but we have Marjorie's the Monorail. New number one. Ba-da, big day.
Yep. It's been a long time. Season and a half.
Yes. Long, long time. But I'm curious to see how long Marjorie's Monorail can stay on top.
Yeah.
It's tough. What is our next episode, by the way?
Let's see. Next episode. I'll scroll back from season 22.
I can tell you right now. Selma's Choice. Selma's Choice.
Oh, that's going to be another really good one.
That's a really good episode, yeah. That's one of the really heartfelt ones, too. But yes, you can find this list at our website, which is simply thesimpsonsshow.com. The lists, new episodes, everything. Everything is there. Yeah, please check it out. Please go and see what we got. Let's see. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixmasterSheryl. It's MixmasterSheryl. Please check out my comic book podcast. It is Hansel Boys Comics Hour, HanselBoysComicsHour.com, iTunes, etc. Matt does not participate in social media. You will not find him.
That's true. However, for once, I'm going to tell the truth. I am actually in Germany as this episode comes out. Surprise. So if you guys are anywhere in the southern German area and you see a way too tall white guy who doesn't speak German, say hi. It might be me.
That narrows it down a little bit.
Yeah. Especially the not speaking German part.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, most people in Germany probably speak German. Here, I'm going to give you guys an additional hint. Cargo pants full of electronics. one of those Columbia shirts, giant hat, wide brim, like safari hats. He'll look like the world's tallest dad. That's how Matt dresses in tourist situations. Although
we'll see.
I was gonna say, like, I don't know, but the lengthy stay. I don't know if you're.
I might have to rotate out for.
Yeah,
some
you might
things.
Have to rotate once. rotate left, turn left, Matt. I think we can call it a day with that. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons.